When we first arrived at the table and found them deep in an anagram competition, I'd actually thought it was kind of cute. After it became clear they played this game with intense focus and pride riding on every exchange, I started to see it differently. Never before had I seen such smack talk over wordplay, and that wasn't even mentioning the fact they'd basically entirely ignored us. "I'm good," I said, taking another sip of the coffee drink I'd ordered to help me stay awake.
"Suit yourself. Are you ready?"
he asked Devin, who was hunched over his own napkin, pen in hand.
"To get your clock cleaned, your ass handed to you, you're..."
"Just spit it out, Stevenson."
"Okay."
Tyler grinned at me.
"Revolutionary. Go."
As Devin began scribbling, Tyler cackled, draining the last of the soda from his own glass with a slurp. When our waiter, a bodybuilding type, walked by, I watched Jilly's eyes follow him. This time, she saw me watching her and mouthed an apology. I just shrugged. Sure, the guys were kind of duds, but it wasn't like anyone was groping me. And I'd gotten a decent dinner out of it. Plus, got to hang out with Jilly, something I was realizing I needed to do as much as I could before we both headed off to school in August. Not focusing on the dating aspect of, well, dating was actually a good approach. Who knew?
"Got it!"
Devin yelled, hitting the table and making my fork jump.
"Unto real ivory."
"Nice,"
Tyler said. Another five.
"You girls have to join in, unless you're scared."
"You don't scare me," Jilly said flatly in response. She pushed out her chair. "We're going to the bathroom."
"All right,"
said Tyler, then signaled to Devin to pick up his pen again. We were almost to the restroom when I heard one of them yell,
"A thigh bone groom taut!"
"Keep going," she said from behind me as palms slapped again. "Do not turn around." Once inside the restroom, I went into a stall while she leaned against the sinks, contemplating her reflection. After a moment, she said, "I can't believe I picked these guys. Normally, my judgment in these things is aces." "It was the sport coats," I told her. "They blinded you."
"Probably," I heard the water running. "I'm just sorry for you. I finally convinced you to go on a real date with me, and this happens. Now you'll never agree to anything again."
I flushed, then came out to join her, pumping soap into my hands. "No, I will. My pride is at stake now, remember? Or at least for the next 7 weeks."
"Oh, right."
She fluffed her bangs.
"I guess I have Ambrose to thank for that, huh?
I finally got my wingman, or woman, or whatever. And it only took our entire lives so far," I told her.
"True. Watch, though. While you specifically aren't looking for someone great, you'll find them. I'm out here digging for years, and you will just stumble over a gold nugget by accident."
"Is that what you think is happening tonight?" I asked. "Because Tyler is no gold nugget."
"I'm just saying there are types," she replied. "Those of us who are always seeking, like me, and those who get found, like you. That's why I think, no offense, that Ambrose might win this bet. He's a seeker, too."
"Who has to commit to someone," I reminded her.
"For 7 weeks," she said, flipping her hand. "My point is that to win, all he has to do is be himself with one person. You have to be someone else with many.
The math doesn't work for me. If he's himself, he won't last with the same person for 7 weeks," I reminded her. "In his default setting, he'd flirt with a parking meter."
"This is true."
She opened her bag, taking out a lipstick.
"But I just worry about you suddenly plunging into the dating pool. I don't think I've taught you enough."
I looked at her through the mirror. "Then why have you been encouraging me to do just that for all these months? Are you forgetting that you said I should do this earlier today? What happened to swine before pearls and rolling the dice?"
"It's not the same thing, though," she said. What I was suggesting was just getting back out there and seeing what happens, with the knowledge that it might not be Ethan all over again. This is aiming for that. It's totally different. But it's something, I pointed out, which is more than I have been doing. She sighed. Look, you know I'll support you no matter what. But is it so bad that I do want another big, perfect love for you? I feel like it's the least the universe can do after what you lost. I'm only 17, Jilly. This is 7 weeks. The universe has plenty of time. With this, she bit her lip, a rare emotional response, then put out a hand, squeezing my arm. Well, if you need a lot of dates that will probably not be great, you came to the right person. I sort of have a knack in that department, and I would like to see Ambrose go down, if only for the sport of it. I'll let you help pick whom he has to date when I win, I promised her. I'm thinking maybe a Tyler or Devon type girl. Lots of high fives. Too bad for now, that's what we're stuck with. She dropped her lipstick back in her bag. You know, that waiter's kind of cute, and he's been super friendly with me. Wonder what he's up to later. You're going to ditch the sport coats right here at dinner? Oh, please. I doubt they'd even notice if we didn't go back to the table. I pushed open the door, glancing back into the restaurant. Tyler and Devon were now building structures with the silverware and leftover plates, both of them clearly focused. We can't just leave, I said. Spoken like a true person who gets found, she told me. Us seekers have no patience for lost causes. Maybe this was true, but in the end she would give them another 30 minutes, during which time we as a group exchanged about 6 words, before pleading a headache and early morning the next day and getting us out of there. When Tyler asked me for my number, I was surprised, to say the least, and almost told him I didn't see the point. We had zero chemistry, and the last thing I wanted was a repeat of this dinner or some variation of it. But Jilly was more right than I'd known. When you've only been found, you can't become a ruthless seeker just like that. So in the end, I gave it to him anyway.
Seriously? Anagrams?
I looked around me, wondering if I'd misjudged how loudly Ambrose had asked this question. Nope. Even phone lady, at a table a few feet away, had given us her attention, briefly pausing her own high-volume conversation. Yes, I said in almost a whisper, like this would compensate. Aggressive ones. It was cutthroat.
Whoa.
The line inched forward, slowly. Lately, the coffee order had become Ambrose's job, but with Eleanor Lynn and her mother back for yet another meeting, it was that much more important, so I'd come along for backup.
So I'm guessing the night did not end with a hot makeout session.
No, I said flatly. He barely spoke to me the whole dinner, actually. But then he asked for my number, which was weird.
Why?
Why did he ask for my number?
No, he said. I know that. You're a hot girl and he loves word games. What I'm wondering is why you think it was weird.
I barely had time to process being referred to as hot, which was a first, before answering. Why would he want to see me again if he had no interest in me when I was right in front of him?
Well, I wasn't there, he replied as the line moved up a bit more. But if I was a betting man, I'd say he had no idea you didn't have a good time.
I think it was pretty obvious,
maybe to you, but some people, guys in particular, are oblivious. It's what makes dating so easy when you aren't that way. It's like having a secret power.
From behind me, I now heard phone lady talking, saying something about steep vet bills and highway robbery. And that's you, I surmised. Superman.
No,
he said, tossing that curl out of his face.
But the bottom line is, all anyone really wants from another person is their attention. It's so easy to give and counts for so much. It's stupid not to do it.
Hearing this, I thought of all the times I'd seen Ambrose leaning into a girl while she talked, his interest rapt and evident. Starting with that very first night in the parking lot of the club when he was AWOL for his mom's wedding, all the way up to, well, moments earlier, when he'd made Emily, one of the stationery store owners, blush when he complimented her dress. Would I have felt differently the night before if, between word games, Tyler had focused entirely on me? I couldn't say, but it wouldn't have hurt. I think I'm going to win this bet, I announced as we moved up in line. If you give attention to every female you meet, there's no way you'll be able to keep a girlfriend.
There's nothing wrong with attention, he said easily. I just can't openly flirt. Luckily, I know the difference.
I turned, facing him. Does this mean you've already met someone with possible life partner potential? I was pretty sure he winced at this last part, but he recovered quickly.
First of all, my life is not 7 weeks, or at least I hope it isn't. Second, finding one person to be with for that time isn't as easy as a dinner date. It takes time and focus.
Or, I countered, you could just take the first girl you would have that one perfect first night with and see if she can go the distance.
True, he replied. But the only girl I met last night was a total train wreck. I basically had to dodge out the back door of a club and take off on foot. Long story.
Was this before or after you gave her your full attention? He ignored this, instead moving up to the register where we'd finally arrived. The lumberjack was behind the counter, in red and white plaid this time.
Long time no see, he said, giving me a nod. Where have you been? She's dating everyone, Ambrose told him. It keeps the girl busy.
I blushed instantly, then cleared my throat. I have someone else to do the coffee run now, I said, nodding at Ambrose, except on special occasions.
Special, he repeated, giving me a grin. Sounds complicated. Hit me.
Okay, I said, then read it out to him. My mom and William's regulars, I was getting her the extra shot she requested, as she was clearly tired, plus two very complicated whip-free and sugar substitute drinks for the Lynns. Plus four waters, no ice, extra lemon.
Child's play,
he told me as he turned to the espresso machine, banging cups and pouring milk.
I thought you said this was hard.
Oh, I said. Well, next time I'll be sure to be more challenging. He looked back at me, smiling again.
You do that.
I laughed, then reached into my pocket for the petty cash I'd grabbed for the order. Once I pulled it out, I realized Ambrose was looking at me, one eyebrow raised.
What?
I said.
Who's giving full attention now?
He asked, just as the steam started hissing. I'm placing an order, I told him.
If that's what we're calling it, he replied.
I believe we were talking about you, I said. As in, you need to get cracking. 7 weeks is ticking past, and you don't want to get disqualified. You better find a lifer stat.
It's been one day, he said in a flat voice. You just worry about yourself.
I'm not worried. I have Jilly. She's been wanting me to date for months. She can't wait to set me up.
Oh, right. And her taste is impeccable. Jughead and Anagram. Sounds like a cop show.
Lumberjack came back to the counter, sliding four waters across to me. As I grabbed a drink carrier and started loading it, he said,
Sorry to eavesdrop, but it's an occupational hazard. Did I hear you guys betting on dates? It was her idea, Ambrose told him, and I'm very competitive.
Shut up! I felt myself blush again. To Lumberjack, I said, It's just a stupid thing. I need to date more and him less. We're seeing if we can do it.
I can totally do it, Ambrose added. I'm not so sure. Date more? The lumberjack said to me, ignoring this. I can't imagine you'd have a lack of offers.
Now I was definitely blushing. Why had I come for coffees? Even an idiot could read off a list. I said, Well, it's
complicated, I guess.
He looked at me for a second, half smiling, then turned back to the machine. Again, I could feel Ambrose staring at me.
She likes a man in plaid, he said eventually, under his breath.
Noted.
Please shut up,
I whispered back. Then I concentrated on listening to Phone Lady, now going on about her first husband, until our drinks were done and Lumberjack brought them to the counter and rang us up.
2211, he said.
I slid the cash in my hand across to him, then filled another drink carrier, handing it to Ambrose. After I collected my change, he grabbed a napkin and scribbled something on the back, then handed it over as well.
Well, if you need any help with the bet, let me know. I'm competitive, too.
I looked down at the napkin. Leo, it said, with a number underneath. Okay.
I protest, Ambrose said. The rule about the dating bet is you don't talk to dates about the bet.
We never made that rule, I told him.
I'm making it now.
Someone cleared their throat behind us.
Let's go,
I said, then looked at Leo.
Thanks.
No problem,
he said, then smiled at the next customer who stepped up, already giving their order. As we wound past the remaining line, I felt clumsy, so thrown off by what had just happened that I had to steady the drink carrier with my other hand. When I was with Jughead, Anagram, and any of the other boys Jilly had dragged me out with, I'd just felt like I was going through the motions, holding up my end of a bargain I didn't really even remember agreeing to. But this, an unexpected boy taking me by surprise, was both different and familiar at the same time.
Attention, Ambrose announced, as he pushed the door open for me. Stepping through, I heard Phone Lady still talking and wondered if she ever got tired of her own voice. Like I said, it means everything.
Everything was a lot to deal with, though, when you had gotten used to nothing. I needed increments, a few somethings, maybe an anything first. I looked down at the napkin, which I realized I was clutching in my hand, the neat block print, the number in blue ink. If I texted, how would he respond? If we spoke, what would his voice sound like on the other end of the line? Again, too familiar. I slid it into my back pocket and tried to do what I did best and forget.
Chapter 13.
What time is it?
You're not supposed to ask that, remember?
We'd made this rule around 4 a.m., when it was dark and we still had a while until daybreak. Now, though, 2 hours and change later, the sky was turning lighter and pink, the stars fading even as I tried to keep track of them. Morning was here. And we were where we'd started, just below the hotel, on the sand. After finishing our pie and coffee, we'd walked back along the boardwalk, then the narrow main road of Colby, passing a couple of blinking streetlights and only a handful of cars. When the hotel sign had appeared in front of us, bright in floodlights, I'd wanted to keep walking, going as far in the other direction as we could. But Ethan's dad was leaving at 8 a.m. sharp for the long drive back to New Jersey. So instead, we went to the beach, where we found a row of folded chaise lounges, took one, and curled up together. I'd never felt so close with anyone, ever. Maybe this was because of what had happened earlier beneath the pier. My lips had been sticky with fruit and chocolate, Ethan's breath sugar-sweet coffee as he eased me back into the damp, cool sand. I'd expected to be nervous my first time, and never would have thought it would have happened like this. But as he slipped my dress off my shoulders, then eased up the skirt, I'd found myself arching up to meet him as if I'd known every move ahead of time and had only to do them. He'd asked if I was sure so many times after sliding on the condom that I finally covered his mouth with my own to silence him. It hurt a bit, which I'd expected, and I'd cried after, which I had not. We stayed there for a long time, the wind blowing sand across us now and then, my knees pulled to my chest, my head on his shoulder. For the first time in hours, we didn't talk, and in that silence, I heard everything else I needed to. Now, in his arms, facing the water, I could smell salt on his shirt, and beneath it, the slight tinge of his cologne, as well as sweat. It would only be a matter of time before someone came along, walking with their dog or kid, making it clear that the beach and the night were no longer ours alone. Thinking this, I squeezed my eyes shut tightly, again willing time to stop. Like the game Ethan played with his friends, striking a deal, I would have given anything for a few more hours. A gull called overhead, swooping. Somewhere, a car horn beeped. 10 hours, Ethan said, right above my ear. I turned, looking up at him. In daylight, I was noticing new things. The freckle on his chin, a scar above one eyebrow, the little bit of stubble already coming in. That's how long a drive it is to Brownwood from here.
Half a day, I said. That's not so bad.
When you come, he told me, shifting, I'll take you to Spinnaker's, where they have the best pretzels and limeade. And to the town bell, the largest in the state, which is pretty much the only other exciting thing around.
More exciting than limeade?
I know. It's hard to believe, he agreed.
And when you come to Lakeview, I replied, running a finger down the buttons of his shirt, I'll take you to Luna Blue for fried pickles and to see the angel.
Angel?
It's a sculpture, a metal one, right outside of this office downtown. The woman's a realtor or something. It's huge, with these crazy wings made of bottle caps. When the wind blows, it spins.
Wow. That is better than our big bell, for sure.
I can't wait, I said.
Me neither.
With every silence now, I was more aware of the passing of time.
I'm so glad I left the wedding and came down here last night, he said.
I couldn't decide if I wanted to close my eyes and just listen to him, or keep them open so I could have him in my gaze as long as possible. Not as glad as I am, I replied as he kissed my hair. For once, I really did do something epic. He laughed. I'd told him about Jilly's directive, of course. I felt like I'd told him everything.
I think that's the first time I've been referred to in those terms.
But not the last, at least as long as I'm around.
Oh, you'll be around.
He slid his arm to encircle my waist.
Don't worry about that.
I heard it then, the opening bouncy notes of that same Lexi Navigator song. It seemed like days ago he'd shared that story with me, not hours, and I wished I'd enjoyed having so much still ahead while I had the chance. The ring of a phone was yet more proof of the intrusion of the world, even if it did have a nice beat.
My dad, Ethan said, answering it. Hello? Yeah, I'm up. Nah, couldn't sleep, so I came down to the beach.
I loved that I was a secret. I'd remember that later.
Let's just grab something on the way. I'll meet you in the lot at 8. A pause. Because that's what we said last night.
Reflexively, I closed my eyes, curling more tightly against him.
I'm not ready to go yet, he said, the words reverberating in me. 7:30, then.
A pause,
Another gull swooped over us, crying.
Fine. Okay. Yeah. See you.
He hung up. I didn't want to ask, but anyone could tell when you bargained and lost. How soon? I said quietly. He was quiet a moment. 35 minutes. I opened my eyes, lifting my head, and moved so I was over him, looking down into his face. I don't want you to go.
I don't want to go.
He reached up, tucking a piece of my hair, wind-blown, sand-tinged behind my ear.
But it's a long drive, and he's ready.
I swallowed, then tried to smile. I'm going to hate that Lexi Navigator song even more now. It's like she took you away from me.
Hey, don't hate on Lexi,
he said.
It's a good song.
But not the one that made you cry, I pointed out. He reached up, taking the finger I'd extended to his chin and grabbing it.
That's between you and me, Lulu. I trust you.
I smiled. I won't let you down.
You never could,
he said, so easily that it was this, finally, that made the tears well up in my eyes.
Hey, don't cry. You know I'm easily emotional.
I'm sorry, I said, wiping my free hand over my face. This has been so great. I don't want to end it on a bad note.
End?
He sat up.
Nothing's ending here. At least for me. This is just a pause until we're together again.
To see Big Bells and have limeade? I managed to get out.
And eat pickles with angels,
he added. With that, I was sure I would lose it, and probably would have if he hadn't leaned in closer to me, kissing me long and hard, his fingers pressed against my back. I'd never felt so happy and sad at once, the absolute convergence of two opposing emotions, and together they made my heart full enough to feel like it might break. When we finally pulled back from each other, I was sobbing.
Don't,
he said, then swallowed himself, looking past me.
We'll talk all the time, and text, and make plans right away to see each other again, like today.
Okay, I said, barely managing to get the word out.
We will,
he said, thinking I was doubting this, but I wasn't. I never doubted him. There just wasn't enough time. I reached over to his other wrist, tilting his watch to see the face. It was 6:46.
You should probably go.
He pulled a hand through his hair, then cleared his throat, but didn't say anything. A woman with two kids, one in a bathing suit, was coming down the beach toward us now, a cup of coffee in her hand.
Walk me up,
he said. I got to my feet, picking up my shoes from the sand beside the chair, as Ethan stood as well and found his own. Then we started toward the steps that led to the hotel. He was holding my hand, our fingers tightly entwined. Even in motion, I wanted to be as close to him as possible. I didn't put on my shoes after climbing the last step, or even when we circled the pool to the hotel entrance. Instead, I waited until the last possible moment, standing in front of the doors there, before sliding my feet into the straps and buckling them. The night had been barefoot, and the night was over. As Ethan shook out his socks, then put on his own shoes, a housekeeper carrying a load of towels came out the door, glancing at us with eyebrows raised. Some stories tell themselves. We were halfway to the lobby elevators when I realized we might really be about to say goodbye. When I slowed my steps, he said,
I'm just going to get my stuff. I'll come back down and we'll go out together, okay?
The relief I felt hearing this was immense, a reprieve, if only a short one.
I nodded as he leaned in, kissing my forehead. Then the elevator came and he stepped in, smiling at me just before the doors closed. I walked over to the lobby bathroom, pushing the heavy door open and going inside. When I saw myself in the mirror, I laughed out loud. My hair was wild, wind-blown, and tangled, my lips swollen from kissing, the straps of my dress tied crookedly, one higher than the other. As I reached up, trying to smooth my hair, a small piece of dune grass dislodged itself from somewhere, falling into the sink in front of me. I reached down, picking it up, then turned it in my fingers slowly one way, then another. "This is what it will feel like when he's gone," I told myself, but the thought was too big. Not yet. Back out in the lobby, Ethan was standing by the front doors, a duffel bag at his feet. He'd tucked in his shirt and splashed some cold water on his face. His skin was cool as he kissed me, a cheek brushing my own. "Found your phone," he said, reaching into his jacket pocket and handing it to me. "You're going to need it." "Are you saying you're going to call?"
"Probably before we even leave the lot."
I smiled. "Then you'll need my number." He pulled out his phone, swiping to the contacts, and handed it over. I could feel him watching me, so close as I typed in my name and the digits, then hit save. "There. Done." He took it back, then sighed.
"I don't want to be done."
"Me neither." A car pulled up outside, just past the overhang of the hotel. I could tell by Ethan's face that it was his dad. The car did look new and expensive, low to the ground and cherry red.
"Just stay,"
I said quietly before I could stop myself.
"I wish I could,"
he replied, then pulled me closer, burying his face in my hair. "Is this the end?" I thought. "Or would there be another kiss, another moment, more time, just like I wanted?" But then he was pulling back from me, still holding my hand.
"I gotta go, though. I'm so sorry."
"It's okay," I managed to get out. "I'll be there for Limeade before you know it."
"I'm holding you to that."
Then he did kiss me again, one hand touching my face, lingering there even as he finally pulled away.
"This isn't over, Lulu. It's only the beginning, right?"
"The beginning," I repeated. "Okay." I saw him draw in a big breath, then let it out before he turned, starting toward the revolving doors. When he was almost there, he turned, dropping the bag and jogging back over to me. As soon as he was close enough, I had my arms around him.
"I love you,"
he said, close to my ear.
"I love you too,"
I replied. Then I kissed him, trying to put everything I felt and had into this last bit of contact. When he pulled away, it was all I could do not to sob. And then he was walking over to the doors, pushing through them and outside. I got only the briefest glance of his dad, also tall, stocky, and dark-haired, watching him approach from over the roof of the car. He popped the trunk, and Ethan dropped his bag in, then walked back to the passenger door to climb inside. I knew I'd already gotten my goodbye, several of them, but I still couldn't make myself move as his dad got behind the wheel, starting the car. Just as they drove off, two women approached from outside, pushing the doors into motion. My last glimpse of Ethan was this combination of the doors turning and the car moving in a prism of motion and spinning that left me dizzy and yearning, as if the whole world itself tilted, not just my own. Chapter 14.
"Wait, they're not coming?"
my mom said, as William waved his free hand, trying to quiet her. But the photographer will be here in 10 minutes. Of course, I understand, William said into the phone at his ear, using his firm voice. Just hearing it, I sat up straighter in my own chair. But we'd agreed you'd participate in this photo shoot. There's no way we'll find someone else on such short notice. Remind her this was part of our deal, my mom said. He flapped at her again. If they stand us up for this, no discount on the rehearsal dinner fee. I might even mark it up. Yikes, I thought, raising my eyebrows. When I snuck a look at my mom, she looked so incensed I quickly went back to folding programs. Well, that's unfortunate, William said into the phone, sitting back in his chair. And, of course, we'll discuss how it affects our fee. Fine. Okay. Right. No, my mom said flatly as he hung up the phone. No way she just canceled on us for this. I won't accept it. You know, I usually am a big fan of denial, he replied with a sigh. But we probably need to call the photographer and reschedule. We can't shoot wedding images without a bride. Just then, as if on cue, the front door chimed. When I looked over, a petite woman with close-cut black curls was entering, pulling a case behind her. A light setup was over her shoulder. Morning, she called out, totally oblivious to the mood of the room. Where do you want me? My mom groaned, putting her head in her hands. This was dramatic for her, but I understood the frustration. Ever since Natalie Barrett Weddings had been chosen as a finalist for Local Business of the Year by Lakeview Monthly, she'd been on edge, doing everything she could to better our chances of winning. This included, but was not limited to, eschewing the staff photographer the magazine had sent to get some quick candids in favor of a professional taking pictures of a real-life couple in our office. One of our upcoming brides, Marlo Wagner, had been all set up to come in with her fiancé that morning until the phone call a few minutes earlier. We'd had a lot of problems in the office, but lacking a bride and groom at the same time had never been one of them. "I'll call the magazine," William said now, picking up the phone again. "Tell them we need another day." "Don't bother," my mom told him through her hands. "They already made it clear that if they don't have these images by business close today, they're going with stock ones." Stock, William. Can you even imagine? "There has to be a solution to this," he said, as the photographer started unpacking cameras and lenses from her case. "We don't need a real bride and groom, just two people to play the part." "No one wants to see us cutting a cake," my mom said. "We're too old and grizzled." "Speak for yourself. I got carded buying Prosecco the other day," he replied, somewhat haughtily, "and I wasn't thinking about us." I was moving on to the next stack of programs when I became acutely aware of the fact that I was being watched. Sure enough, when I paused and glanced up, they were both looking right at me. "No," I said firmly. "No way." "She has a point," my mom said, although she kept her eyes on me. "We're not in the child bride business. However, if we just did body part shots..." "What?" I asked, horrified. "It would easily work," William finished, as if I hadn't said anything. "Hands cutting a cake, hands holding a bouquet, shots from the back. Yes, I think it's doable." "Do neither of you hear me saying no over here?" I said. "I guess we don't necessarily need a groom," my mom told William, answering this question for me. "Although I did like the symmetry aspect of some of your ideas." "I'm not speaking to either of you," I announced, going back to what I was doing. The door chimed again, cheerful, and I made a point of not looking up. The silence that followed, however, was familiar, as in a recent way.
What?
I heard Ambrose say. He'd been out getting the first coffee order of the morning.
What is it?
Now I had to speak up. No, I said loudly.
Okay, okay,
Ambrose, assuming this was directed at him, said quickly.
Fine, I did eat one of these donuts I just got us without offering them around first.
My mom and William were still studying him, much like hungry cats in cartoons eye plump birds whistling on a swing.
Fine, it was two,
Ambrose added.
I'm sorry, I was hungry.
Also, this isn't about donuts, my mother told him. She looked at me again. It's about helping out when the company is in a serious bind.
Oh,
Ambrose exhaled.
Well, sure. What do you need?
See, she said, pointing at him. Now that's loyalty.
I am not going to pretend to be engaged to Ambrose, I said.
Engaged? He grinned at me. Oh, this should be fun.
This was not the word in my head when, half an hour later, I left the conference room with my nails still wet from a rush manicure from Liza, a nail tech from the nearby salon, whom my mother coaxed over with a crisp $50 bill. Because this was supposed to be shots of a casual client meeting, I'd kept on the sundress I'd worn to work that day. As I walked toward Ambrose and the photographer, now set up in the reception area, I saw he had on a new, crisp shirt. Also, he was smiling at me in a way that made it clear he still thought this was hilarious.
Now, I think first we'll just do some shots of you flipping through the books of other weddings, the photographer said, gesturing for me to sit down on one of the chaises. Because we're not doing faces, I'll blur your profiles in editing, focusing more on your hands together on the pages.
Ambrose patted the seat beside him.
Come on, honey. Time for our close-up.
I looked at my mother, who held up 10 fingers, symbolizing the $100 I'd been promised for going through with this. It was not enough. Still, I sat down.
Okay, the photographer said, squatting down and lifting the camera.
Now let's have the groom open the book and hold it in his lap. Luna, lean into him and point to something on the page.
Should we talk motivation?
Ambrose said to me.
Want to develop our backstory? How long we've been together, all that?
No, I said flatly, jabbing a finger at a picture of a cake, flowers trailing off it.
I think, he continued, ignoring me, that we met cute. Like, you dropped a kitten and I picked it up for you.
Why would I drop a kitten?
Well, clearly it was an accident,
he replied, sliding his other arm around me. I told myself not to stiffen, then glared at William, who had the nerve to laugh out loud.
Your hair smells good, by the way. Is that vanilla?
I didn't respond to this. The photographer, now shooting, said, Luna, can you relax your mouth? You look kind of angry.
Imagine that, I said under my breath.
From the albums, we moved on to posing with the cake William had bought just for the shoot, a grocery store variety he'd carefully decorated with fresh flowers. The photographer put us beside it, then arranged our hands, Ambrose's above, mine below, on a silver cake cutter. Now just put it on the edge, she called out, checking her light meter. And Ambrose, shift your hand so we can see the ring on Luna's finger a bit better. It's just so pretty.
3 months' salary,
he told her, insisting still on being in character.
But my baby deserved a rock.
My mom, who was the actual owner of this ring, snorted. William said,
You guys actually look really cute together, if you don't mind me saying.
I was about to tell him that, in fact, I did, when Ambrose moved in closer behind me, his mouth right at my ear.
FYI, your tag is sticking out. Let me get it. It's what a fiancé would do.
A second later, I felt his fingers on the small of my back, smoothing down the fabric of my dress there. And the weirdest, craziest thing happened. I felt something. That unmistakable, sudden rush of feeling when your body responds to a touch in that certain, specific way. As I blinked, trying to process this, I realized that despite my reluctance, I hadn't stiffened even once in all the times he'd touched me so far. So weird.
"Great," the photographer called out, clicking away. "Now, Luna, turn your head and look up at Ambrose. Again, I'll blur your features, but I love this staging."
I swallowed. "Calm down, Barrett." Then did as I was told, turning toward him. With one of his hands over mine, the other beside me against the table, it was almost like easing into an embrace, and I was surprised, again, by how natural it felt. No elbows or awkwardness. I just fit there.
"What?" Ambrose said, looking down at me.
"Nothing," I replied as the photographer moved in closer, getting even more of us together. It seemed like she shot forever, us frozen in that spot. Even so, when we broke apart, the space between us felt huge, much bigger than it was, as if somehow it was the odd thing now.
"Okay," Jilly said, extracting a lock of her hair from Bean's sticky grip. "Tell me again exactly what you said to the lumberjack."
"His name is Leo."
"Whatever, just read."
I looked down at my phone between us on the bed. At my desk, Crawford was now reading my dictionary the way anyone else might a newspaper, flipping through for the big stories.
"Hey, it's Luna. Going to a party tonight. Want to come?"
She considered this, wrinkling her nose.
"It's a bit conversational for my taste."
"It's 11 words," I pointed out.
"Yes, but it's how they sound."
Bean let out a wail, and Jilly put her on the floor, where she promptly made a beeline for my closet, her hands slapping the hard wood.
I would have been like, "Party Tuesday, you in? No punctuation, because you're a busy girl, and let him ask who it is. Don't tell him."
"Why not?"
"Because it adds mystery," she said, "and mystery is everything, especially at the beginning."
"Well, it's done now," I told her. "He already responded."
"And said what?"
I hit the screen, scrolling down. "Sure, off at 7. From her serious face studying the screen, you could have thought this was an ancient scroll that needed to be translated.
"Yeah, he's got upper hand now. It's obvious."
"How?" I asked.
"He responded with, 'Sure.' It's like you're twisting his arm, begging him. He's agreeing, not accepting."
"You get all that from 'sure'?"
"It's syntax, context. You have to read between the lines."
"There aren't lines. It's like one sentence."
"Two," Crawford corrected me from the desk.
"That was two sentences."
"Are you supposed to be listening?"
Jilly asked him.
"Read your book."
"It's the dictionary."
"Even better."
She got to her feet, walking over to the closet, where Bean was now trying to chew on one of my shoes. Picking her up, she said,
"Let's just work with what we have. He's off at 7. Now, you absolutely can't go to his work and meet him there."
"Why not?" I asked. "Isn't that why he told me that?"
"Because that looks even more desperate. You never meet anyone halfway. You make them come to you." "He's already had, sure. You need to call the rest of the shots."
"This is insane," I said. "I refuse to believe everyone strategizes at this level when it comes to a simple date."
"Don't call it a date,"
she corrected me. "Too formal. You're hanging out at a party with a group." There was a bang outside my door as Kit Kat entered, each carrying a bag of pretzels.
What are you guys doing?
Jilly demanded.
Did you let yourselves in?
No, William did,
Kat told her.
And he offered snacks.
No fair, Crawford said. I'm hungry.
Mom says you need to drive us to the truck so Dad can take us to gymnastics,
Kit told Jilly, popping a pretzel in her mouth.
I thought she was doing that. I have a party to get to.
She's tired. She said she needs to lie down.
Jilly and I exchanged a look. Her mom went nonstop. When she got tired, it usually meant something, as in another baker something. I am going to East U in August, she said to me under her breath. Baby or no baby?
Who's having a baby? Crawford asked.
Nobody, we said in unison.
Jilly shifted Bean to her other hip, then looked at Kit Kat, now sitting on the bed together, crunching.
Fine, I'll drive you guys, then circle back and get ready. Luna, let's meet at 6:45 at my house. In the meantime, text the lumberjack again, but only give the party address I gave you. Nothing else. You have to have hand. It's important.
Luna knows a real lumberjack? Crawford asked.
No, I told him. I want more pretzels!
Kit announced, crumpling up the bag.
Can I go ask William?
No, Jilly replied. We're leaving, all of us. Now, let's go. Crawford put the dictionary back. The twins got to their feet, and Jilly followed, Bean squirming for me as she passed. I patted her chubby hand, giving it a kiss, and she laughed.
Why would anyone want to add to this?
Jilly said, once everyone else had thumped down the stairs. It's madness already.
Love makes people do crazy things, I guess.
At this, she harrumphed, then waved over her shoulder as she left. As usual, after a baker departure, the room felt bigger and quieter. I sat down on my bed, looking over the text exchanges with Leo. To me, they were just words, all the nuances and meanings Jilly saw invisible. Was this really how it worked when you were seeking? It seemed so complicated. Regardless, I did as she'd said and sent the address of the party, nothing else. A moment later, he texted back with just a K. From sentences to words to just letters. It was hard to see this as progress and not the other way around. Chapter 15. By the time I'd gotten ready, changing my shirt twice, redoing makeup once, I still had nearly an hour before I was set to meet Jilly. So I went downstairs to look for William. He was in the kitchen. William loved to cook, had even toyed with going to culinary school at one point after college. But he hated the small kitchen at his otherwise perfect-for-him high-rise modern apartment, preferring to keep it pristine at all times and not smelling of garlic. So when he felt like cooking, he always came over to our house, where he could spread out across the island and counters and know whatever he made would be enthusiastically welcomed. My mom and I were lean cuisine and takeout types. About all she could make was toast, and my strength was chocolate chip cookies. These were great staples, don't get me wrong, but you couldn't exactly eat them every night. There was no set schedule when William would cook, though, which added a surprise element.
What's the occasion?
I asked him as I came in. He glanced over his shoulder, chopping at something.
Your mother read another article about clean eating and getting in shape. She's inspired and requested a home-cooked, healthy meal.
Again? We could both do with a lifestyle change, he replied, the knife banging as he made more cuts.
We are going to start cooking more and walking every night as well.
Sure you are, I thought. They made these diet and exercise pledges every few months, proclaiming it the start of a new era. It was usually only a week at best before I found them once again on the couch after work, splitting a bucket of chicken and watching Big New York or Big Chicago, their favorite reality shows. I knew better than to point this out, though. Sounds great. What are you making?
Chicken paillard with asparagus and shaved Parmesan and a pear salad, he replied.
I'm just hoping you guys have lemons. It's the one thing I forgot. William, you know we don't have lemons. We don't even have bread right now.
What?
He looked aghast, wiping his hands on his apron, a plain linen one he always brought from home. He went over to the fridge, pulling it open.
Dear God, there is nothing in these produce drawers, not even a bag of spinach.
I'd be less surprised to find a live animal, I told him. He shut the door, shaking his head.
I always wonder how you manage to get to 18 without scurvy.
Hey, we order salads from Tost almost every night, I said, defending myself. Just because it's not here doesn't mean I don't eat it.
Well, thank God for that.
He sighed, looking at the onion and chicken breasts out on the island.
I need lemons, though. They're key to the dish.
I can run and get you some, I said. Farmer Fred's is, like, 2 seconds away.
Farmer Fred's?
He repeated.
No. I don't cook enough to lower myself to that kind of standard. I'm going to Spice and Thyme. While I'm there, I'll grab some prosciutto and melon, as we do need an appetizer, and maybe some of those Belgian macaroons for dessert.
What happened to healthy eating?
They're Belgian and organic, Luna. Are you coming or what?
15 minutes later, we were at Spice and Thyme, the gourmet market, where the fragrant notes of expensive coffee hit you the second you stepped through the sliding doors. It was practically required that you pause just to inhale. We both did.
I want heaven to smell just like this, William said.
And movie popcorn, I added.
Well, of course.
He grabbed a basket and we started over to the produce, which was so beautiful and arranged so meticulously, it felt like a shame to remove any of it. As William took two lemons, I examined a nearby artichoke that was so big and perfect it looked fake.
I make a great sauce for those with Greek yogurt and dill, he told me, adding it to the basket, for another night, now that we're eating healthy.
Right, I said, already picturing it rotting in our fridge.
Excuse me, but can you point me toward the kumquats? They're on special right now, correct?
A woman pushing a cart asked William. She had a list in her hand, glasses perched on the tip of her nose.
He said, I don't work here.
She flushed instantly.
Oh, sorry.
But I do know they are over there, by the persimmons, he said gallantly, pointing.
On sale? I'm not sure.
Thank you, she said quickly, clearly embarrassed as she turned her cart and headed that way.
5 minutes, I said to him once she was out of earshot. That's how long it took.
Better than 3, I guess, he replied, picking up a melon and knocking it. And I was even holding a basket, honestly. For as long as I could remember, no matter where we went in the world of retail, it was a given William would be mistaken for an employee and asked for directions, fitting room access, or, in my favorite situations, advice on purchases. Somehow, he just exuded authority and knowledge even when he was off the clock. He got annoyed, but personally, I found it hilarious. We moved on to the meat section, stopping at each of the free sample stations along the way. Another one of our rituals. We were standing by the case, him studying the prosciutto, when the guy working came up from the other side. He was dark-haired, very muscled, and had tattoos up both arms as well as a thick gauge in one ear.
William, he said,
his voice friendly.
Where you been?
You never came back to report on that parma. I was looking at a piece of tongue, ugh, and so didn't see, at first, that William was blushing. It was only when he answered with a stammer that I noticed.